Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to the Red Men TV podcast. It's me, Chris Pajak, joined today by one Mr. Ben Kelly. Ben.
Hello.
Have we done the main podcast before?
I've never done the main podcast before. It took me nearly 2 years to be invited on.
Wow. No. Okay. No, so we'll see how you perform and let's see if it's going to be another 2 years.
I've never, it's not only the main podcast, but also when you get to the bonus Q&A later and you get a bit more of the wacky questions. That's always a good laugh.
They are brilliant. And if you do want the rest of the podcast, we do split this in two. The Q&A section goes on to the redmentv.com. It's £5 a month. If you like it, keep it. If you don't like it, just fuck it off. No one's arsed. Except me. I'm really arsed because, you know, I want your money, quite frankly. What? I'm being truthful. It's marketing Red Men TV style. Nobody ever fucks it off. Loads of people fuck off. No, they don't. I'm only kidding. They don't fuck off. So we've got a kickoff question as per. This time it's come from Paul Jenks Guitar, which is incredible, really, that a guitar can type. But hey-ho, here we go. For some reason, Klopp can't be around for the remaining Premier League games, Ben Kelly. Let's say he gets arrested for being really disappointed at a journalist's question. We can get a past Liverpool Football Club Premier League manager in to hold the fort for the remaining games. Who, Ben Kelly, do we get?
The short answer is Rafa Benitez.
Is it? Is that the long answer as well?
The longer answer is it took me a little bit of time because I think, for me, growing up, I wanted to pick somebody who I was aware of. So that kind of rules out anybody before Rafa because I don't really remember Houllier and Evans. I've got no chance. I think Souness was in charge when the Premier League started. We had the debate upstairs about, but you know, Rafa's won us the league, and even though Houllier won us a few things as well, I was
Rafa
half
won us the
Champions League. Sorry, obviously. Obviously, for me, then it's Hodgson was after Rafa. It's not going to be Hodgson. There's a case for Kenny because Bailey made the good case that at this point, if you wanted just somebody to tide you over for 9 games, do you go like basically Solskjaer style, somebody to come in and go, you lot are great, you're going to do this, all that. But also, like, there's a case of Brendan Rodgers because he's got me closer to seeing us lift a league title than any other Liverpool manager has. But I think just purely for the calming influence and the tactical, you know, astuteness that Rafa has, and also the experience of winning stuff with the club, his relationship with the fans, I think for me it's pretty much nailed on Rafa.
Okay.
There's the long answer.
I like it. No, I like that. It was between two for me. It was between Rafa Benitez and Kenny Dalglish, and you know, I was a little bit up and down, and Bailey's fucked me over here because he mentioned before he's gone a little bit wide on the camera because I like to talk with my hands, and I was like, do I really? And I start talking for the first time and I'm weighing stuff up right
go.
And left.
Yeah,
so he was right now, yeah. And now I don't like it, so I'm just going to have to shit on my hands for a little bit like I'm in a strippers again, which is something that I have to do because otherwise I will touch. The answer for me, I ended up with, was Kenny Dalglish. Nice. And the reason that I ended up with Kenny Dalglish is for probably exactly what Bailey was saying before, is that, you know, 9 games to go, I just want someone who the team can look up to and go, he knows how to win this. He's won a Premier League with Blackburn in 1995 or whatever it was, but he's also won league titles for Liverpool. And, you know, it's Kenny as the Premier League manager, and that was the one thing that made me hesitant, because I don't think he's as good a Premier League manager as he was a First Division manager, because the game's changed and moved on so much. But really, how much time is he going to be able to spend on the training ground with players? You know, I think if for this is my thought process. If Rafa Benitez came in, could Rafa Benitez keep playing at this Liverpool side playing the same way? And I went, you know what? I think Kenny could. I think Kenny would just let them go out and express themselves and play with a little bit more freedom and actually divert the attentions away from everything else.
Yep.
You know, he can be that shield. You saw Kenny when he was the manager the second time around. He was just a shield. He sniped at the press and all that type of stuff. So I thought it would be between Rafa and Kenny, and it came down with Kenny Dalglish. But a great first question from Paul's Guitar. Thank you very much. On to the news in brief then. Under 23s tasted derby defeat last night, Ben.
They did.
You were there for us. You were in the press box. Mm-hmm. Liverpool unfortunately lost 2-0. Everton won a derby at Anfield.
I know. It was mental. I took a picture of the scoreboard at the end. I'm going to put it up for Halloween to scare everybody. No. Everton are a good side under 23s. Did that tickle you?
Yeah.
Everton are a good side on the 23s level, but Liverpool's under 23s season has been a bit of a weird one because they've not been beat prior to last night. They hadn't been beaten since November, but they didn't have a great start to the season. So they sit fourth in Premier League 2 after last night's fixtures. Actually, I don't know whether they've dropped to fifth, but they were sitting fourth in Premier League 2 going into the game last night. We've got some really good players in there, but last night we weren't very good at all. And I don't know how much of that was down to Everton being really good. They've got some good players. The lad who scored, Nathan Broadhead. I wouldn't be surprised if I see him around the Everton first team squad. You know, particularly as we get into that stage of the season now, where Everton are like, their season, even joking aside, is basically over. They're not going to go down. They're not challenging for European spots. So they're in that stage of the season where they may have a few of the young players, give some of the young players a bit of game time. So he's probably going to be one of them.
Just on that, and I know this is obviously a Liverpool-based podcast, but I always find it quite interesting to talk about other teams at times. And do you think Silva's in a position where he can blood some youth, or do you think he's still feeling pressure from the Everton fan base that he needs to actually get his first team producing?
I don't know if the pressure from the fan base is a worry for him. As long as he's got the reassurances from the board that his job isn't in trouble, I think he will look to do it, because why not? I mean, it's like for us, you know, we've got some really good players in our under 23s and we're trying to blood them in best we can. It's difficult when we've got such a good squad, and there's some players that I know that I've heard of from talking to people last night that are quite frustrated with the manager at the moment from our perspective, because they're not getting in the side. But what can you do when you've got a front three that's world class defenders in Van Dijk? You know, it's difficult. I think from Everton's perspective, if the first team players aren't performing, then, you know, why not bring in at this stage of the season some hungry young players who will want to make an impact, who will want to create a connection with the fans? And I think, like I say, if Silva's got reassurances that his job's safe no matter what happens between now and the end of the season, I think he should look to do that.
Okay, that's interesting. I slightly differ probably on my opinion there, and I would look to have, if I was Silva, I want my first team firing on all cylinders, and I'm not sure he's quite got that yet, so it's a tough one, isn't it? You've got to balance next season and the seasons after with the team right now. It's going to be difficult. A player that was rumoured to be in and around the squad for last night's under 23 game was Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. Did he feature at all, Ben?
No, he didn't. It was a really good marketing move, if nothing else, to get people buying them £5 tickets and then announce 5 hours prior to the game, oh no, it'll be Friday instead. Come to Friday's game. No, he didn't, which was unfortunate, but it was a physical game, and I think it was probably a smart decision. You know, at any level, under 18s as well, derbies are physical games. You know, there's quite a few local lads in there for both sides who want to win, particularly from the Everton perspective, where, you know, all joking aside, I'm sure they all want to win a derby. Absolutely. At Anfield, obviously. So they're all going there. There was a little cluster of away fans in the cop, you know, so it's got the feel about it. You know, and there were quite a few heavy challenges. There were a few, you know, spells where physios had to come on and do their job. So I think from Everton's perspective, if Oxlade-Chamberlain was in that side last night, there would have been a bit of, well, let's leave some on him, let's test him a bit, and you can't blame him. So I think it was probably a smart decision.
Okay, well, he is close, though. Yeah. He will probably be due for a return at some point over the next week or so. That's absolutely massive for Liverpool. I think we've talked all season long, haven't we? So many Liverpool fans keep saying, big Oxlade-Chamberlain hole in this side. You know, we need those driving runs from the centre midfield. We need somebody who's going to pick the ball up, who's going to put the goalkeeper under pressure from distance. It feels like we've been waiting so long, and it's nearly a year. We have been waiting for friggin' ages to get Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain back in. He's got, I think he's got something to say in this title race, and I don't know whether it's just me, I don't know whether you feel the same on this, but feels like if he can come back in and get through a few games on adrenaline, he might be a huge difference maker for us.
His relationship with Mo Salah last season was really starting to blossom, and that's something that it's unfortunate that he's had this sort of stumble in his momentum in that case, you know, breaking that down. And I'm sure he'll be able to build that up again. I'm sure they're all mates off the pitch and all that. But I've always said pretty much throughout this whole injury break for him that there are some players, or, you know, throughout sort of, you know, history, I suppose, when players suffer these big injuries, you know, there are cases where players just haven't come back the same. Yeah. But I am convinced that, you know, we've been kept up really with Oxlade-Chamberlain's journey, recovering from this knee injury. His mentality is just that elite athlete's mentality. I don't think it's going to be like that for him at all. I think he's going to come back. You know what? We may not see the best of him. No, you know, even if he comes back in the next few weeks, we may not see the best of him through this season. But I think we will see the same player eventually. You know, same with Joe Gomez, who's come back and he's performing. He's young enough to recover the form properly, you know, and not let the injury define his career. And I think that's what he's been determined to do throughout this whole recovery process.
The thing that interests me most about this, and I was speaking about this maybe a couple of months ago, is, you know, we've seen Alex, you mentioned it, and him coming back into the side and his recovery, and it's been very well publicised by Liverpool Football Club, and I don't know why Liverpool have done that, but I've got a theory on it. We'll talk it through now. I don't know whether this is just the new social media Liverpool that are going to do this for every player, but it feels like such a smart move by Liverpool, because, listen, if they're going to do this for every player, brilliant, but if not, they've decided that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is the guy that's going to get the focus. The fan base want to see him. They've heard us talk about him for so long that we're interested to see where he's up to. You know, but not only that, it's going to help his recovery. You know, they put a post out like a month or two ago, him just starting to get back on the weights or running or being at Melwood, and everybody's talking about him online, and he can't help but see that. And it'll gee him up even more to get back fitter, stronger, faster than before. And I just wonder whether that's a thing for mentally for the player, that he's now like, I need to get back in for this fan base who can't wait to see me. But also, or is it just Liverpool are just going to do this now because they've never done it before?
It's interesting. I don't know if it's partly because maybe they've sort of used it as a, maybe they'll decide on the back of this whether they're going to do it for everybody. I feel for me, it kind of like reflects his personality in a way. If it was one of the quieter, in quotation marks, players in the squad, say it was somebody like
a Lallana, maybe.
Yeah, Lallana or a Matip. You know, I don't know. I don't think we'd have got this. But I think because of, you know, Oxlade-Chamberlain, he's one of the nicest blokes on earth. He's so bubbly. He's always happy to chat to you. You know, he's so good in interviews, and he gets on with everybody in the squad. He was already starting to build up that connection with the fans, with some big goals and things like that. And I think it's important. It was almost important for his mentality, really, of you know, getting through this, to recognise that people miss him almost. I don't know whether that's part of it, but yeah, I think. The amount of, I think the way we've been allowed to look into his recovery process and he's been so open about it as well, I think that's benefited him and us as well. I think
absolutely
both ways.
Well, it was supposed to be news in brief, but we've done quite a few minutes on them, so we've got one final news in brief story, and it's the Echo report on the Klopp didn't play Keita because of trust. And this isn't a report in the sense of Klopp's told them this. This was an opinion based article that was written, and it was James Pearce actually wrote it, interestingly enough. And, you know, Keita was coming into a bit of form. He played well against Bayern Munich. He played well against Bournemouth. I think he's played, like, you know, 6 minutes since over Man United and Everton and all that type of stuff. And it's a bit disappointing, really, isn't it? You know, when you think you're finally getting to see the best out of a player. But I suppose the piece was talking about, and I'd like your opinion on this, Ben, is whether we've seen enough of Keita. I mean, it's one thing performing against sides who are expected to get beaten by Liverpool, but it's a completely different one to go into Old Trafford and Goodison Park as a Liverpool player. And if Klopp isn't impressed with his work off the ball, and he's very impressed with his work on the ball, but doesn't trust them to do defensive work, then it makes sense that he's not put him in the firing line for these games. But really, he's been here for nearly a year now. You'd expect him to be trusted enough, wouldn't you, at this point?
Yeah, it also depends for me. I think a big one is, we still, again, a perfect example, sorry, just briefly going back to the Chamberlain stuff. We don't really know a lot about Naby Keita in terms of what's his personality like. He seems
supposed to be a shy guy.
Very, very quiet and shy. And I don't know whether there's trust is the wrong word, but is there a lack of confidence in Klopp that he can overcome back and he can, at this point, overcome that in the big games? You've got to have balls on you to go and put in good performances at Goodison and Old Trafford. For me, the Watford one is the disappointing one, because that's where he should be playing and getting his minutes, if that's the case. So I don't know why he's not playing against Watford, but there's a variety of reasons that could be. You know, we spent all season up until Christmas going, where's Fabinho? Mm. And it's all about taking time. Klopp likes to do this.
That's now a player that you clearly see the Klopp trust.
The benefit,
Fabinho.
Yeah. So maybe going into next season, having had another full pre-season, you know, again, I'm sure they'll be going out to wherever and doing pre-season tour, stuff like that. For me, we've got to see more of Keita doing... I don't even know where he's up to with the language, but we've got to be doing, seeing more media duties from Keita to let us get to know him a little bit. We can't. All we know at this point is that 1 minute video that he did right at the beginning of him when he was unveiled. He was like, "I'm scared of dogs," and you're like, "Oh right, okay." We don't know anything more about him,
and that's interesting in and of itself, isn't it? You can read into what's not being put out there, because I think we saw lots of videos with the Ox and players who've come in who've done these like best mate videos and all that type of stuff that we've been doing. But clearly, Klopp might be going to him, "Listen, you don't do any of that until you sort this stuff out on the pitch, and when you sort that, you get to do a little bit more of that if that's what you're interested in." Or maybe he's not interested in it. Maybe
is that a problem? Because
it shouldn't be. He's a footballer.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I mean, it's a problem that he's not interested in that, because I think
I'm not asked if he's not.
Do you think? I think there's a little bit of. My assessment of our fan base in general is that we like to have that close connection with our players, and if there's a player who's not interested or distancing himself a little bit from us and having that sort of connection through whether it be a phone screen or a laptop screen or, you know, journalists with the press talking through people like that, I think that is a little bit of a problem, because, you know, even players like Jordan Henderson did a fantastic interview prior to the Champions League final last year. I think it was with Paul Joyce, maybe. Yeah, I think it was with Paul Joyce. You know, they're talking to us all the time through the press, but we're not hearing any of that with Keita at the moment. And it's not a massive concern. It's not like I'm losing sleep over it, but I think over the next 6 months or going into the next season, I would like to hear
a bit more of Keita. Can I ask you this then? If Naby Keita scored 10 or 15 goals this season and put on 10 assists, so you're asked that he's doing interviews or not?
No, probably not. I think it's a fair question. But again, it's like, he's not though, is he?
No. Why would you say, oh, he's got to be doing more of that? No, sort that out.
Yeah, but
sort that out first.
Is it not all linked in the sense of that's, you know, one of the reasons that perhaps he isn't getting into the side is because, for whatever his personality with his team, we don't know how well he's getting on with the rest of the team. Like you say, he's not doing any of them best mate videos, he's not doing any of the publicity stuff. All I'm saying is we just don't know a lot about him, and that's because of that lack of interaction with the press and stuff like that. He could be a sound lad and he's working hard in training. I'm just sort of stabbing in the dark a bit.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
That's it. He could be doing nights trying to learn English better. And if that's the case, that's more important than doing stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think just sort the stuff on the pitch out and the rest will follow, I'm sure of it. And when he feels comfortable and confident in his own skin, we might see more of him in the press and stuff. If you want to know any more, actually, on the news this week, there's loads more stories that we'll be covering in depth and detail over on the website, theredmentv.com. We're doing the Reds News Roundup tomorrow. Steele's in to host that one. Promises to be a belter of a show, as it always is. Big topic. We've been nearly 15 minutes now. We've not spoken about the derby. We do have to talk about the derby, unfortunately. The derby day draw. 0-0 with Everton. Are you feeling after a few days, mate?
I'm feeling... Pretty much, I mean, we did. I did the instant match reaction with Ross straight away, obviously instantly after the game. So we got, I got the chance pretty early on to talk about it. I didn't do the final word yesterday, but having then, obviously, you know what it's like when you get into the flow of a conversation with somebody. Your thoughts about the game start to unravel a bit, and you know you can get some things off your chest. And to be honest, my views haven't changed much since that game, since that conversation with Ross. I still don't think, and I think the way the fixture list has almost panned out is because we've drawn for quite a few games now. That draw in particular at this moment in time is being put under the microscope more. But I don't feel as if, really, if we don't win the league at the end of the season, the draws against Everton and Man United are going to be the games that we look at. And I think that's what we have to try and take the context for me. On the basis of, you know, the normal context of a season, we've beaten both Man United and Everton once and drawn with them once. Away from home, we've kept two clean sheets. We've taken 8 points from 12. That's not the end of the world at all. But obviously, because of the context of the title race, it's different types of context. Because of the context of the title race, you're looking at it now, or, you know, you get the idiots going, Liverpool have bottled the league, yada, yada, yada. Look, a point away at Everton, for us, you know, because of the rivalry, it's not an awful result. It's just one of them.
I agree with that. And I think, you know, for me, it's not that I've chucked in the towel on the league title. And I haven't, absolutely. And I don't think anybody should do. And I think people have, to be fair. I've seen loads of comments, and maybe not the viewers of this show or whatever, but I do feel like some people have gone the titles, Man City's. My issue at the moment isn't that the draws are not good results, because I do think, you know, in context, Man United away, Everton away, as you say, we get wins against them at home, they're good results. My issue is the team's not performing well enough. That's my issue. I just feel like teams have started to suss us out. And I always say this, and I've always said this. Basically, in football, I believe if you start a new strategy of offence, let's say, and Liverpool have done that this season, they played 4-2-3-1, you get a grace period where defences, there's my American football fandom coming out. There's an adjustment period.
Yeah.
Liverpool, I saw it under Brendan Rodgers when we moved to three at the back. They saw it with the Diamond. It took a few weeks, but people start to get on to how you're playing against them. Liverpool have become victims of their own success. People are playing a certain way against us. We're struggling against that because of the likes of Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain being missing, because we haven't quite got that rotation of forward player to mix it up every now and again, because Shaqiri's form's fallen off a little bit. So I'm now looking at it and going, this side's still a great Liverpool side, but they're working much harder for victories at the moment. We can still go on, win out. I still feel we genuinely can do, but I think a few things have got to go our way to do that. Whereas I look at Manchester City now and think, I don't think they'll drop points.
I think they will.
I think they will.
I think it's quite important, though, for me. I mean, obviously they've got to drop points for us to win the league, but I think at this point, over the next few games, secretly Klopp will be like, we just need somebody to take some points off Man City here, just to stop all the focus on us. All the talk at the moment is, are Liverpool bottling the title race? Are Liverpool, you know, they've thrown away this lead and all this. What we need is just a little bit of pressure to come off us. And I said this last week while we were still top, just to sort of take a breath and go, right, okay. And
the narrative will change.
Yeah,
it has to, because we're second.
Yeah.
And now what you'll see is the laser focus of the UK media and the world media pointing at Manchester City going, can they deal with the pressure now? Can you deal with it? So we'll see a change of narrative. We have to.
Sorry, just going back to your previous point about the formations. Do you think then that what is down to the players to make better, like be more creative on the pitch and make better use of the system that they're going? Or do you think now, as a top manager, Jurgen Klopp needs to look at the system that he's playing and look at the systems that he's got sort of in his playbook, if you like, and go, I need to make tweaks now to, again, find the grace period where over the next 4 or 5 games we can pick up 12 to 15 points?
It's a very good question, and I'm going to half-arse you a little bit. I might get some splinters on my arse from sitting on the fence here. But Liverpool played against Everton at the weekend and we created and missed three big chances. So for all Everton wanted was to push the ball wide and whip the ball into the middle, we were still able to create opportunities to win that game. We were still able to create those opportunities at Manchester United. The issue I think we've got at the moment isn't that the system is fully understood. It's that we're not creating as many chances and we need to be more clinical when we get those chances. So you look at someone like a Mo Salah. If we'd have literally just had Mo Salah from last season playing in the game against Everton, he'd have scored two goals. He's not quite... He's still playing at a world-class level. He's still up there for top scorer in the Premier League and all that type of stuff. He's still dangerous, which we saw against Watford and Everton. But everything he touched literally went in the back of the net last season. And we've not got that. We've not got one of the best three players in the world playing up front for us. We've just got a world-class player at the moment in Mo Salah. And it's those types of breaks that I feel like that's what we're missing at the moment. Aguero's not missing those chances.
No.
Unfortunately, he's banging everything in at the moment, isn't he? And it's just one of them things. There is things that Klopp will be able to do. I do feel like, you know, lots of sides are not playing through the middle against us, for example. They're attacking down the wings because it's much better for them if they lose the ball in wide areas. They can recover. If they like when we beat Man City 3-0 last season, if a team plays through the middle against us, that gives us an opportunity to gegenpress, and we're already in the right places to go on and counter-attack. We're not getting that this season, but equally, we're not being able to play through the middle either. You know, teams are putting two defensive midfielders in front of a bank of four and going to play it out to the full-backs, and we'll see if you can beat us there. And listen, Trent's been brilliant, Robbo's been brilliant in getting those balls into dangerous positions. But we've not got a lead-the-line striker.
No.
You know, we can't consistently rely on Mane out-leaping someone in that number nine spot to score ahead of goal. It's not something that we're brilliant at. That football needs to be so good when we're playing well. That one-touch football, those little one-twos, you know, everything's instigated. It's all pattern play. Trent runs one way so that Mo Salah runs the other. Firmino pulls a centre-back and then Mo Salah can cut inside. It's all that. And that's what we're having is we're getting people in the right positions. We're getting them with the ball at the feet and the ball's just not going in the friggin' net. And you're like, come on, man. But I do think Klopp will have to change it. I think he'll have to change tiny tweaks, but I do genuinely believe he will have to do it. While we're talking about the derby then, one of the big things that's come out of the results at the weekend was Klopp substitutions. I've got a theory on it, but be interested to hear your thoughts on what you made of Jürgen's changes at the weekend.
I think it's difficult, and it's, again, maybe sitting on the fence a bit myself. I mean, we've already talked about Keita and why that might have been a reason that he didn't get on the pitch. Shaqiri's a difficult one because we've already seen the good and the bad of Shaqiri really already in terms of the impact he can have when it goes well, but also, you know, particularly starting games this season, he's not really had the desired impact. But, you know, he's not world class. He's a good player, but he's not world class. So he's going to be inconsistent. And at the end of the day, he's cost us £12.5 million. So, you know, whatever, we've already pretty much got our money's worth out of him this season, I would say. Anything else from this point in is a bonus. But for me, I don't like Lallana personally. I think we're done with Lallana. I think we should be done. I think we should have moved him on at the beginning of the season. I mean, I think if we had Ox fit, then we might have done. And, you know, maybe if we'd got in, say, Nabil Fekir, I'm sick of hearing that name, by the way, but, you know, if we got somebody in of that
caliber... You did bring him up, Ben.
Yeah, I did. But, you know, that's the example that people use.
Absolutely.
No, that's a very good point.
You've lost your train of thought now. Please tell me about Adam
Lallana. About Adam Lallana and how we're kind of done with him.
So
for me to bring on Adam Lallana in a game,
if we'd have signed someone like Fekir,
then I think we may have moved him on last summer. That was my point. Oh, Nabil Fekir, that player that doesn't play for us, that half of Twitter does think play for us. I've not lost it completely. I just think that in a game like that, and it depends really, because a lot of fans viewed the derby again as a must-win game.
Yeah,
I'm not sure in the end Klopp did. I think again it's down to performance. Away at Man United, we played that bad at Man United. A point was a good a good point. Now, you could argue that a point is always a good point away at Man United, but there's the cynics out there that'll say, well, all the injuries happened, Man United were depleted, we should have won that game. But in the second half away at Man United, we were so bad, a point in the end was a good draw. I'm almost thinking the same about Sunday, again, with the performance. Yeah, we created a lot. I don't think it was quite as bad as Old Trafford because we actually created chances at Goodison. But overall, we were bad. We were just bad. And I think it got to a point where Klopp was like, well, really, you know, the crowd's against us. Everton were having a bit of a go. Now, they didn't have too many chances either. We're having a bit of a go. He's probably thinking all it takes here is us to commit one too many men. They surge forward or they get a dodgy set piece. It drops in and they get a dodgy goal and we've lost the game. I think at this point, I'd rather have Milner, somebody a bit more conservative, Milner and Lallana on the field, more experienced players who are going to keep their heads. Now, Milner didn't have a great game, I didn't think in particular. Lallana was a bit non-existent, but they didn't do anything stupid. Whereas you bring on less experienced players, particularly Keita, who can, you know, maybe lose his way in an atmosphere like that, and suddenly you're carrying a man, you're carrying a player, and you know, Everton can then go and, like I say, get a dodgy goal and you've lost a precious point. I think in the end that was his way of thinking. I think again, context is everything. He's thinking the way we played here, we're away at Everton, a draw in the end wasn't an awful result, and I think that contributed to what was going on.
I agree almost completely with everything you've said there, Ben. I that's exactly how I felt. I said that during the game. You know, I was on the kickoff. If you want to go and see me say it, go, but I'll just tell you right now so you don't need to bother. When he made those substitutions, it was at a time with the game when it started to get end-to-end. I mean, you look at the possession stats first half and we're over 60%, second half we're like 52 or something like that. And you look at how many attacks per minute Everton were producing. From that 46 to, what would it be, 75 minutes, the first half an hour of that second half, Everton were attacking a lot more than we were. It felt end-to-end at the time. And so to bring on an attacking substitution with someone like a Shaqiri or a Keita, you're not 100% believing in defensively. You could have lost the game there. Yeah. I think he's brought on Milner, he's brought on Adam Lallana. For their experience. Also, it's difficult sometimes to get into a game when you're a sub. And in a game in that atmosphere, and it was an incredible atmosphere that they generated, the Goodison, and hats off to the Everton fans for that. You know, I was talking to someone yesterday who said 45 minutes before in the concourse, it was mental.
Yeah.
Like, and he's like, that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen at Goodison Park.
It should do, because Everton are a good club, but, you know, obviously they've lost away over the last few years. My question to you then is, regarding that, you know, Milner's not going to be around forever, you know, I've already spoken my thoughts on Lallana. Do you think, I mean, Shaqiri potentially is that, but do you think, again, a game changer needs to be sort of top of our shopping list in the summer in terms of having somebody who can, you've got on your bench pretty much every week, or you can put in the starting lineup and take out one of the stronger ones in our team to sort of go, well, we've got somebody here who's pretty much guaranteed every time to change the game in our favour. And it's difficult to pinpoint those players.
I don't know if those players exist, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, gone are the days of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer playing for Manchester United and being one of them. You know, gone are the days of Fairclough being our super sub and all that type of stuff. I think you just need better first 11 players. I think you need 15 first team players. And the first team players are your subs that you bring in. In some games it's, you know, a Nabil Fekir style player playing from the beginning. Some games he comes off the bench. I think Klopp has always known this season that we've needed an extra attacking body. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been in for him. I'm not sure we sign Alisson if we don't sign Fekir. So I think he knew there was two positions. He thought he could sort one of them, and he'd be able to make do. I think the injury to Firmino has halted us and hurt us a little bit. Not that I've been unimpressed with Divock. I think he's been brilliant the last two games, to be honest with you, but tired probably towards the end against Everton. But certainly going back to the substitutions, Milner and Lallana are experienced players, and what I was going to say was, you know, with 20 minutes to go in a game of that magnitude, in that type of atmosphere, then you need people who can just start straight away, come into the game and just be on it straight away. And for all people think they're bad players and stuff, they didn't let us down.
No.
You know, they came in, the touch was good, they tackled, Milner did, the first thing he does, as he always does, and he just joined the team. And listen, Klopp may have been a little bit conservative, but I believe Klopp thinks that City will drop points as well.
Yeah.
And we might be looking back at this going, that was the point that won us the league. Maybe. You never know.
Hopefully.
Little plug, actually, for the Around the League podcast, just been filmed. It's a new show on the Red Men TV. Well, I say new, it's been around for quite some time. Now, we don't talk about it very often on here, though.
Start of this season,
So, the Around the League show, it's not just Liverpool-focused. You do take a look through the Liverpool lens at all the other sides. Are you enjoying doing the show?
I love it. And you know what? The best thing about it is I get to do it with Ross. You know, obviously, like I said at the top of the podcast, you know, I've been here nearly 2 years now, and you know, Ross is one of my best mates, so I just get to sit down and chat about footy with him. It's not always, it's pretty much never about Liverpool. We drop it in, you know, bit of chat, you know, particularly if we've not had a chance to speak about the game at the weekend, say, but mostly we try and take off the bias glasses mainly and just discuss football. So it's normally the Premier League. You know, prior to Christmas it was always about Man United, but this week, for example, we've just discussed rule changes coming into football. If you've seen those stories this morning about, you know, penalties, rebounds, you know, handball goals and things like that. We discussed Tottenham and Pochettino and whether or not Pochettino's taken Tottenham as far as he can take them with the budget that he's got, whether he needs to move on and further his career by going to somewhere like Man United to win trophies. And we've also, you know, in the last few weeks we've had some guest on as well, so we had Leanne Prescott on, we had Baz from Toffee TV to give us the Everton perspective a few weeks back, and you know, I'm emailing and texting people all the time trying to get people in to join us, so it's a great podcast. I really love doing it.
Okay, yeah. Cool, well here's a little clip from said podcast.
Stop my messing with stuff when there's bigger issues within football. So this is FA trying to change rules and obviously make the game better, but how many discussions did he make about, or bigger deals than you make about grassroots football and racism in football, which is still rife. I don't say this because I've just been doing an assignment on racism in football. Yeah. They could do so much more, and it's all right saying, oh, we're with the Kick It Out campaign, we're promoting this and we're promoting that. Change rules to say that if anyone's caught doing anything, then you'd be taken to a court, or change rules so that, you know, there's so much of a fee, a percentage of a football club has to go towards grassroots football, yeah, or percentage of the FA income has to go towards grassroots football. Instead of, I'm going off on money, instead of going, oh, we're going to change penalty kicks now.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Why? Because you're trying to be seen to be doing something.
Right, as mentioned about three times already, it's the redmentv.com. First month is completely free, then it's just £5 a month. Thank you to those new subscribers from last week who put a discount code out. Lots of new subscribers. I hope you're enjoying your subscription. We'll get back into this one then.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is going to be focused on the title race first and foremost, and this section is going to be focused on Burnley as well at the weekend. So, Here we go. It is the big topic. It's the stresses and strains of a title challenge from a Liverpool fan's perspective. On the whole, how are you dealing with it? Are you enjoying it?
A little bit, yeah. I think, yeah. And I don't know whether that's the right answer anymore, because everybody else around me seems to be like... Have you ever seen that gif of like that thing where that little teddy bear or something where it's like, it's just sipping tea and like the room's on fire and it's like, this is fine. I feel like that's me, where like...
Is that Kermit the Frog? No.
No, what no. I don't know what it is. It's just some little cartoon where... Right.
It's a little yellow dog.
Yeah, it's like a... Yeah, I thought it was a teddy bear, but yeah, apparently it's a dog where it's just sat there. It's just like drinking something and it's just the room's on fire. It's just sat in its kitchen. It's like, yeah, I feel like that's me, because I feel like even Paul... One of the most optimistic people that I know, glass half full, Mr. Glass half full, puts a video out on his channel saying he's not coping with it. But part of me's like, I just love that Liverpool are here. It's a rare thing for me in my life. I'm 20 years old and I've seen a maximum of that thing there. Bailey's showing us off camera, which is useless for everybody listening.
And certainly useless for me and my eyesight from over there.
But, you know, a maximum really of twice in my lifetime, and I barely really remember the full details of 08-09. You know, I was 10 when that went down. You know, so I've had one proper title challenge in my life where we've been in it in the last 5 games. It looks like, fingers crossed, that we are going to be in it until the real, you know, nitty-gritty moments of the season. I'm just enjoying watching this group of players. I'm enjoying the manager, you know, Brendan Rodgers, even though I thought he was going to be the man to deliver me my first league title in my life, he was never quite as warm as Klopp is. Klopp's just a completely different charismatic man. I'm just trying to enjoy this team while it's here, because I know that I remember basically taking Steven Gerrard for granted growing up, thinking, you know, he's always been around. Up until I was 16, Steven Gerrard had always been in the Liverpool squad. He was in the squad before I was born, and then when he left, I was 16. So growing up, you've had great players around Gerrard in terms of, you know, that 08-09 team, particularly where you've got Alonso and Torres and Mascherano and Carragher and Hippier and Reina. You know, I'm looking at that now going, we didn't really know what we had until they were all gone, particularly with like Alonso. You know, when we lost him, that was basically when it all fell apart. And right now I'm watching Virgil van Dijk week in, week out, and going, I genuinely think that we've got one of the best players in the Premier League here, but also one of the best defenders, and maybe even already one of the best players that I've ever seen play for Liverpool. And that's all I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to look... If we win the league at the end of the season, it will be one of the happiest days of my life. I'll probably cry, because it's just something that has eluded me for so long. But at the same time, I'm trying not to think that far ahead. I'm just trying to think, look, there's two top Premier League sides going for this trophy at the moment. As much as I don't like Man City, the way the club's run and the fans, they've got a top team and they've got a top manager and they play some great football. So even when Man City are on, you know, I watch most of Man City's games because, you know, I love Leroy Sané, I love Kevin De Bruyne when he's on song. I even Fernandinho doing all the dirty work in the middle. You know, I enjoy watching them play. But right now, I'm stressed out about it, but I'm also just trying to enjoy it best I can.
Yeah. I see people talk about this all the time. I don't think I've ever spoken about this, actually. I don't know whether it's a phrase that people use or they genuinely do. So I'm trying, you said it there, I'm trying to see it that way. I don't try to see it in any way. I just,
see
I'm a feelings guy.
Yeah.
I feel one way or another. I don't try and guide my own feelings one way. And I think some people try and do that. They do say, listen, I'm trying to see the positives. I don't get that.
It's so easy to just be dumbed down in the negatives. At the end of the day, look, we do all this and we absolutely love our jobs and we go the game, we pay the money to see the team play. At the end of the day, we can't really do anything to directly affect the results of Liverpool Football Club. The closest we can get is by going into that ground every other week and singing your hearts out, right? At the end of the day, it's down to the 11 players on the pitch at any one time, the manager and his coaching staff. That's the only people it's down to. So for me, you know, after a loss or after a tough result at the weekend, you've got to try and look on the bright, because what's the point? What is the point in getting dumbed down in the negatives when, just you can't worry about the things that you can't control. That's my opinion. That's my opinion in life. If there's a problem that you cannot control, it's not your problem.
But I wouldn't like people to think that I'm putting a positive spin on something. Right? Because I think when people say, I'm trying to find the positives in this, they are putting a positive spin on it. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're not. Maybe that's just an expression that people use, is what I'm trying to say. I come out of the games and I feel terrible after a Liverpool draw or after a Liverpool loss. I feel fucking shit. Terrible, right? But give it 24 hours, my feelings have changed. I've rationalised it. I've not tried to find positives. It's just happened to me. I go back, I watch the game again, I get a sense of how I feel for it. And then watching the games again is the best thing you can do, because you're taking the emotion out of it and you're looking at it, knowing what happens, and not being led by your emotions throughout the game. So I'd implore anybody who feels bad about it to just watch the game and tell me what you honestly thought of Liverpool's performance after 24 hours when you've rewatched the game without emotion. Because I think it changes massively. And that's why I don't put a positive spin on it, because I do watch the games again. I take that emotion out and I just watch and go, yeah, Liverpool were good there. Bad result, but we were good.
Yeah.
We deserved to win the game. You know what I mean? And it's interesting.
I think you look at it as well. I mean, you're such a statistical and tactical guy. Obviously, you do that. You do the show for us. So when you're looking at it down that perspective, again, that is separating the emotion from the football itself. And you know, I think if I took more time to look at it in the depth and detail that you do, because I know how hard you work, then I would absolutely probably be the same. But for me, when I the Old Trafford one's the best example. I've got no interest in watching that game again because we were so bad, and I've just got no interest in doing that at all. So for me, then my sort of coping mechanism is, well, you know, this, and this, and that's what I suppose that is just where we differ in terms of I've got to find the positive spin because I'm not going to get
I'm
down
not watching that shit again.
That's it.
And that's fair enough. It'd be interesting to know how you guys are all feeling, actually. Let us know in the comments section, how are you dealing? What are your coping mechanisms with this title running? Because, listen, I remember 13-14, and I don't remember us losing our heads as bad as this.
No.
And it was only a few years ago,
to be
honest. Did
we lose our heads when Odson was in charge? Probably not.
Yeah. Yeah, we were on the picket line. it was more, and it, listen, that is what it is. And that's the one thing that I feel, and I'm not saying that I'm not having a go at younger fans for being younger than me, right, off the bat. Younger fans have an opinion based on their lifetime, that's fine. I happen to be older than a lot of Liverpool fans, and there are Liverpool fans that look at me like I'm a young kid, and that's fine. You are what you're experiencing, you are your own age, right? But I can remember how bad it got with Hicks and Gillette.
Yeah.
And you only know where you are by knowing where you've come from.
Yeah.
And right now, we're 8-9 years removed from nearly going pop.
Yeah.
And tell you what we've been through since then is fucking all right. You know what I mean? We've been to a Champions League final. We've been to a Europa League final. We've been to cup finals. We've won a cup in that time as well. And listen, look, you know, we're not as far removed. What is it? We're coming up on 30 years, Liverpool, before they've won the title, right? Since they've last won the title. I think Everton are about 35.
Yeah.
Right? There ain't much difference there.
No, not at all.
But one team's still had success over the time and another hasn't. And really, when you look at it in titles, how far away we've been, and you put that into perspective of Everton, only been a few years longer. It was mid-80s, they last won a title. Was it 85? I can't remember. It might have been 85, 86 or 845, I can't remember. We're not that far removed from them, except since then, we've had trebles, we've had Champions League, we've had FA Cups, we've had all kinds. So we're a club that's successful without that league title, and we're really lucky to be a fan of this club, because not only that, we've got a great team, a great manager. Now I think we've got good owners as well. We've got a fantastic fan base when it all comes together. And generally speaking, most of the fans are positive. And the problem with Twitter is that this fucking narcissistic echo chamber, and I say this all the time, where bad opinions get fucking blown up. Go to Instagram. No one posts pictures of bad shit. That's why it's my favourite platform. It's just all nice stuff.
Yeah.
I don't watch the news. I don't know whether I've ever told you this. I don't watch the news for anything other than politics. And I read about that because it makes me feel bad.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in that shit. I don't need to know about 20 kids dying in a fucking cave. Thank you very much. It just makes me feel bad. I ignore that.
Yeah.
I just get that right out of my life. Fuck off. Yeah. Flipboard. What am I interested in? These things. I'll read that news. That's how I deal with
stuff. That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah, fuck it. I don't need to know about
that. Fair enough. I mean, as somebody who wants to go into the journalism industry, then I've got to do it. But again, it's removing that emotion from things and looking at stories and finding interesting stories and stuff like that. I'm doing it a lot for my course at the moment where, you know, something's quite sad and you've got to be like, hello, can I interview you about this? You've got to try and take that away. But two quick points that I want to make on it. First of all, in terms of this team's performance, again, context is everything. We are almost over, actually overperforming, yet we find ourselves a point behind. Now, that is, first of all, luck. You know, pretty much any other period of Premier League era that we exist in, we're running away with this league. You know, particularly post-Fergie, between Fergie and Guardiola, that sort of 4 or 5 years, then we're absolutely nailed on for the title. And that's a credit to City as well, because they're just so good. You know, God forbid we were doing this last season when City were as good as they were, because we'd feel even worse about ourselves. Second of all, Paul's talked about this a lot. This isn't our last chance.
No.
And what I like, again, you've talked about this just then. We've got a good manager. We've got a good set of young players who, by the way, are all tied down to long-term contracts and aren't going fucking anywhere. We've also got good owners, as you say. Owners who've learned from the mistakes. Owners who've come good and are now backing the manager and the project that they're putting money into. This isn't like 13, 14 where everything's going to fall apart. This is our first chance.
Yeah.
If we and without having... I'm not going to use that dreaded phrase, but we've got... you know, a good 3-4 year sort of era here where it won't be surprising to anybody if we win the league over the... like, no. If it's not this season, whether it's next season, the season after, you know, this isn't it. And I think that's what people... again, context is everything. You've just got to look at the bigger picture and go, look, if we don't do it this year... We'll add a Nabil Fekir or somebody of that quality to be a bit more creative in midfield. We'll add another centre back to really partner Van Dijk, and then we'll go again next year. Yeah. That's what football
is. We were 25 points behind Manchester City last season. We're a point behind them now with 9 to go. I think we're 16 points off our entire points total in the 2008-2009 season. I think we got finished with 86, was it, in 2008-2009?
Right. Yeah.
And that's the best Premier League side that Liverpool had ever had. We've got 9 games to get 16 points to beat our best ever, right? And we might get 95 and not win this league, but that doesn't mean that we can't close the gap and overtake them next season. A season's a long time in football, and you put so much emotion in that's why it hurts. You don't want to write off a season in January like we've done too many times in the Premier League era. But that isn't the case. This is the start of a cycle. You're absolutely right. We've got the bones and the spine of an incredible squad, and we don't have the funds because we're not cheating, first and foremost, that Manchester City have. But you know what? We'll add our 1-2 players at a time, and we'll be better next season for it. So we'll focus a little bit on Burnley before we get into the questions at the end of the show. And for me, you know, we'll start.
I think he will. I think it's probably having had another week's rest now. I mean, I think we're probably quite fortunate that we're not in the first round of the Champions League fixtures, because you know, if you look at Tottenham, they basically had 2 games a week, and I know we'll have 2 games a week. We'll just have that fixture next week, but I think it'd be nice. I think it's nice for us now to not have just a bit of rest.
Oh yeah, it's energy sapping Old Trafford and Goodison as well, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. So I think it's fallen quite nicely for us there. So I think he'll be doing his training this week. He'll be back in it, and I think I'd like to see him start. You know, why would I? Why wouldn't I? You know, if he's fit enough to do so, we'll see. But I think, again, it's a bit... Burnley are coming back into form. Obviously, they've recently beaten Tottenham. They're looking a lot more like the Burnley of last season rather than the Burnley of before Christmas. But this, again, feels a bit more like Watford for me, where we've got to go out and just sort of... really get out of second gear, but still win 3-4-0.
Yeah, like that's what I think that's important. I couldn't care less if it was a statement win. I just think a comfortable victory, because that's what this season was built on, and we seem to forget it. It was those 2-0 victories without conceding a goal and just scoring a couple and then having done. And I think we need to think about Bayern Munich. We need to conserve energy. And I'll be honest with you, if it means Firmino doesn't start this game and start against Bayern, I'd take that. Because I still think we've got the quality.
I still think
we've got the quality to beat Burnley. It's going to be interesting. We'll obviously get on to the build-up show over the course of the next couple of days and the starting 11 prediction. Let's get in to some of the questions then. This is a really interesting one, actually, from Sean Privilege in our Redmen TV subscribers Facebook group. Is there a difference between supporters and fans? Do supporters support their team through good and bad? Through storms, and fans follow the team and watch the game and buy a shirt and are less likely to be there in times of need. Is this what we are seeing right now? Not meaning to cause issues, it's a genuine question. Do you want me to take this one first?
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's very rocky ground splitting it like that, to be honest with you. I think fans can be supporters and I think supporters can be fans at the same time. I think I'm really fortunate to live in Liverpool and be able to show my support for the side. Ultimately, I'm still a fan, but I am also a supporter. I think you can have the most passionate fans in the world and the most passionate supporters in the world. I think, you know, let's use the foreign fans thing, right? There are people who live in America and who live in Australia and who live in Germany and all over the world who are just as passionate as me about football. They just don't get the opportunity to be a supporter for whatever. I'm a really passionate fan of the Minnesota Vikings, but I've never been there. Mm-hmm. But I am passionate. I watch every single game. I stay up late. And I would hate to think that people thought less of me because I haven't got the money to go over and watch a game in Minnesota because I've got a family and kids that I've got to try and put food on the table for. I can't afford to go over there. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things. So I wouldn't be drawing a line there, but I do feel that supporters are the people that go to the game.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that you're any less of a fan than a person who doesn't get to go to the game.
No, I think it does. It absolutely does. I think I pretty much agree. I think I agree. Yeah, that's what I agree on. I agree that there is a difference between supporters and fans, but I don't think that what's written down is the definition of the difference.
Yeah.
Because again, you know, we went out to Australia a couple of years ago. My dad's mate who's emigrated there in the last 5 years, now lives in Melbourne, and he's a Liverpool fan, but he stays up until 4 a.m. He'll get up at 4 a.m. to watch us play the Champions League final. Now look, that's a massive event, but he got up at like 3 a.m. to watch that game, to watch our goalie throw 2 goals in his own goal. Did that make him care any less? Did that mean he didn't stay up for the next game? No, not at all. He's going to do that every single time. And you know, that is almost as much of a show of support than we can offer, because you know it's not just with the NFL. You know, the NFL is it's not as harsh of timings for us when you know we watch that. I mean, I won't stay up for like the 1:30 a.m. game because I'm not as passionate about it as you are. But like, you know, sometimes they start at like 7:30. You know, you get away with it. With Australia, it's pretty much the middle of the night, like every time.
And they stay up.
Yeah,
and they stay up. That's how they show their support.
And that is what it is. I completely agree with you. I think there is a difference between supporters and fans in the way that you said. I think. There are people who do this, but that isn't what we should label them. There are fans who aren't simply as bothered, and you know they're there for the good times, and that's the way it is. But again, I just don't think it's as black and white as this. The mad thing is,
I don't think Liverpool are the prime example of this. Everyone knows I've been on the kickoff for the last couple of weeks and stuff, and I've watched games with other fans of other clubs, and some people just don't care as much as we do.
No.
And it's mad. I'm like, what? Really? Really? They don't, like, Liverpool fans watch the football.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's all that they do. Like, and I've got mates of mine who are fans, but there's, you know, they just switch off.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But they still support us.
I've got mates who are Wigan fans, right? And they go, the bizarre, that some people, I just find, and I love him to bits. I live with him, I love him to bits. He goes all the way around the country following Wigan, right? And that is support, right? You know, they're not very good, put it that way. You know, I went to watch one of the games the other week. But when he goes on these away trips, they won't make it into the ground until like 1:30 in the game because they've been in the pub. I'm like, and I don't get that. And it's like, well, it's part of the day and all this. And he comes back at me because, you know, I struggle to get to away games because it's so difficult for us to get a ticket half the time. But, like, he's like, oh, you just don't get it because you don't go away games. I'm going, but when I go to away games, I'd be going to watch the football. Yeah, I'd go for a few beforehand, but I don't understand the culture of showing up at half time. What's the score, lads? I don't, you know, that is mad. But is he any less? Does that make him any less of a supporter because he's still spending the money and going to support his team? I know, but so that's what I mean. It's not as black and white as what we're seeing on this piece of paper. And it's a good question. It's a good question.
It is,
but it's not. I just don't think it's as black and white as that.
Yeah. So our good friend Aubrey Reynolds, formerly of Redmen TV at OOB, with
possibly the worst question that I've ever seen.
Hardest fucking question. Jesus. You have to swap out a player from our squad for a player from each of the non-top six sides to make it better. What is your squad? So basically, choose 14 players to sack off out your squad and choose another 14 players, one from each of the other sides in the Premier League. I went onto the Premier League website. You can play along with this at home. I went onto the Liverpool website, apologies, and went onto the first team. I then sacked off Brewster, Sturridge, Woodburn, Phillips, Moreno, Mignolet, Kelleher, Lallana, Jones, Camacho, Origi, Lovren, Henderson, and Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Right.
I'm so sorry. But before I get into that, I think most of the players you'd understand, yeah, I had to get rid of 14. I didn't want to get rid of Hendo and Ox, but Ox is fucking injured. And I was like, I am not sure what type of player comes back in the first nine games. I'm hoping that he's going to be great.
Yeah.
But I swapped him.
It's hard. I can see the logic. I don't know if I've done that.
Who did you sack off?
So I've sacked off Origi, Sturridge, Jones, Milner, Lallana, Camacho, Moreno, Phillips, Lovren, Trent, Mignolet. And I'll explain the logic.
Okay, why Trent?
Because I've got Wan-Bissaka in.
Okay.
And I've gone, well, that's basically, it's not, Trent's better than Wan-Bissaka, but it's pretty much the, like, it's not as much of a drop-off. It's not like you're going, I don't know, I didn't want to get rid of another centre-back. I'm trying to do it like for like, best I can. And I'm like, well, you're getting a quality player with Wan-Bissaka if I get rid of Trent.
So, in your new Liverpool first team,
yeah,
are there any other players apart from Wan-Bissaka who is... a non-Liverpool player?
Well, the thing is, I think I've done the question in a different format to you because what I've done is written the 11 of other top six sides that I would have, like, of the players that I've picked. So I doubt that I would have...
Who's your starting right back in your new Liverpool squad?
Wan-Bissaka.
Anybody else?
No, I wouldn't have anybody else. I mean, Callum Wilson's a good player. I've got Callum Wilson in the squad, but I'm not having him over Firmino or anything like that. So the 11 that I've got written down here, these are the players that I've taken, and I've put together a team of players that I've taken. Basically, that's the way I've done it. Why is that strange?
Because you're supposed to put a squad.
I know, but as you were well aware, I was became aware of this question with about 5 minutes before we went on air, and I panicked and just did the diss. So
I kind of didn't do it right. Okay, so who are the players that you took?
So I've got Tom Eaton from Burnley.
Yeah.
I've got Wan-Bissaka from Palace. I've got Jamal Lascelles from Newcastle. I've got Dan Burn from Brighton, who I know from Wigan, who's a good player. I've got Ryan Bertram from Southampton. I play a 4-4-2. I've got Richarlison from Everton.
You play a 4-4-2?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, again, 5 minutes before we went on air. I've got Ruben Neves.
Yeah.
I've got Decore.
Mm-hmm.
I've got Marko Arnautovic.
Yeah.
I've got Callum Wilson.
Yeah.
And I've got Jamie Vardy.
Okay.
And then I've also got Harry Arter from Cardiff.
Yeah.
And I've got Lursel from Huddersfield. And I think that's all of them, but I don't know, is the answer.
Okay. So I did it.
You've done it in a much more organised way.
The right way. except I've got rid of the Ox. I'm not happy about getting rid of the Ox, but I mentioned he's injured. So, you know what? If he's going to not get in the side for another 4 or 5 weeks, I've picked some decent players. So Brewster I took out and I put Punchin in from Huddersfield. Yeah. I like Jason Punchin. I've always liked him, to be honest with you. I think he's a good little player and he's a squad player. Sturridge, Glenn Murray. Woodburn, Zaha, Crystal Palace. Phillips for Nathan Ake, Moreno for Junior Hoylett from Cardiff, Mignolet for Heaton from Burnley, Kelleher for Sessegnon from Fulham. I know he's not a goalkeeper, but so. For Lallana, I took Felipe Anderson from West Ham. I took Sean Longstaff from Newcastle. I took Andre Gray from Watford, Vardy from Leicester, Vestergaard from Southampton, Gomez from Everton and Neves from Wolves. And on here, I've got a depth chart.
Okay.
Right, so my first team is Alisson, Trent, Gomez, Van Dijk, Robbo, Fabinho, Wijnaldum, Keita, Salah, Firmino, Mane.
Okay.
So it's still our first team. Obviously, Matip's second choice centre-back. Here.
Yeah.
Milner's my backup right back. Matip and Ake with Vestergaard and Hoylett are backup centre halves. Sessegnon's my backup to Robbo. Neves is my backup to Fabinho or Wijnaldum, whatever you want to do. Gomez and Shaqiri, Longstaff and Punchin are my backup midfielders. And I've got Felipe Anderson, Zaha, Gray as my backup wingers, and Vardy and Glenn Murray as my backup strikers. I feel like I might have improved on our squad there.
Yeah, I think you probably have. I think you've definitely paid attention to the question for a lot longer than I have. I think it shows. And the thing is, right, I've not even got a full answer for the question that I'm good, that I spent the most time on, that we're going to discuss later on, that I took all the time up for doing this. So all in all, I've had a mare.
Right, final question of the day. Postgrad Phil, well done, by the way, on your degree. I'm going to guess you got a Desmond. Let me know in the comment section whether you did get a Desmond or not. Chris and Tom versus Paul and Ben, tag team wrestling match, who wins?
It's you and Tom all
Thank
day
you.
Long.
Yeah. I know it is.
There's no need for discussion.
No, I just wanted you to say it.
Stupid question.
Well, I'm small. I'm small. And
it's like Undertaker and...
I know.
Who's the little guy with the...
Oh, I don't know.
I wasn't thinking him. I was thinking of the 619 guy.
Rey Mysterio.
Rey Mysterio over there. But the thing is, right... Like, me and Tom would batter you, but Paul's got a bit of, like, ring nous, shall we say, I reckon. Okay. If it's wrestling, you know, I think he's, like, scratching your eyes out throwing stuff in your face and stuff like that. I don't know.
So you think we'd have a chance?
No, I don't think he's got a chance. So there you go. That has been the main podcast this week, The Stresses and Strains of a Title Challenge. I've been Chris Pajak. That's been Ben Kelly. Big thank you to Bailey behind the glass as well. Leave me your thoughts on everything we've discussed in the comments section below. Don't forget to like the video, subscribe to Red Men TV on YouTube if you haven't already, or if you just enjoy podcasts, subscribe to us, give us a 5-star rating on Acast or iTunes or whatever your podcast player is. If you watch the video and you like us on podcasts, do that as well. It's fantastic. Everything from theredmentv.com is available in podcast form now, so you can take it with you, so you can stream it, you can download it, you can do whatever you want. But seriously, thank you very much for supporting the Redmen TV on this incredible journey this season with this football team. Let's hope we can turn our poor form around and really, really just go and win the title this year, to be honest with you. Thanks for watching. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.